What's up, everybody? In today's show, we start out by talking about the DFW real estate market. According to our MLS, all the statistics, all the numbers for the number nerds out there. And then we get into some news stories, including a nice tale of caution about a general contractor that is going to prison for a long time for mistreating a few of his customers. And then we talk about a shopping center that gives me the nice, warm, and fuzzy feels from when I was growing up, and some news about it. And then Tavis gets into a great discussion about flood zones and solar panels and things to watch out for when buying houses that involve both of those things. So there you have it. There's a layout. If you want to jump around a little bit, go for it. If you have not, please pause this thing here in a second. Give us a 5-star review. Give us a little review there on Spotify or Apple. Copy and paste a link, send it to a friend, spread the love. We greatly appreciate all the support we've received so far, and we hope to continue to bring you episodes just like this one today. And so there you go. There's a layout. Hope you enjoy it. Talk to you soon.
Well, they're crooks, and that's what they do. But on the other hand, you know, there's people that just get in over their head, and before they know it, they're just in way too deep, and they don't know how to get out of it.
Yep. One day you're a builder, next day you're in prison for 99 years.
Golly. So this guy's on his deathbed, you know, and this kind of stuff is happening. I was in a transaction like 2 or 3 years ago in the colony, similar thing. It was a 90-year-old lady that was sold a 25-year lease contract.
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
Well, good morning and welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast. I am Ashton Hines, half of the Real Estate Heavyweights. I am a realtor. I am a real estate investor, still learning the ropes. I've flipped 4 houses. I have a long-term rental. I've been working with a ton of investors lately on the realtor side of things. And I still do home health and the physical therapy assistant in the home health realm. And I am working diligently to go full-time in real estate. I'm getting oh so close. But helping me out with that move and helping me out learning the real estate business is a good friend and just a really all-around good dude, great real estate investor in the DFW area for years and years, Tavis Westbrook. What's going on, Tavis?
What's up? What's up? What's up? Tavis, like Travis without the R.
Yes. Have you ever talked to your mom about where she got that name? Is that like some sort of family name or something? Or
it's kind of lame. I mean, I think it was just from like a baby book, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I was just kind of my, you know, normal response is, you know, just hippie parents.
Yeah.
It's like, where'd you get that? Hippie parents. So. Yeah.
It wasn't like they meant to name you Travis, and then the nurse messed up the sheet or something at the hospital.
Yeah,
just go with
unique.
It.
I mean, I've heard different things, like, oh, you know, I guess my biological dad was his name was Thomas was his first name, and I've heard, oh, it's Tavis is Scottish for Thomas or something, but you know, when you kind of look at it, there's Tavish. You know, with an H, you know, so I don't know,
he might be Thomas without the H, and his whole life he's had to tell people I'm Thomas without the H.
But I, you know, it, even with that, it's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense because I don't think we're Scottish or I don't think there's Scottish background. So
just makes,
like
a cool
I said,
story.
Just hippie parents is the easiest thing.
Well, my name comes from a soap opera. So a lot of people ask, you know, where'd you get your name? That's a cool name. You know, I think my mom told me she was watching a soap opera when she was pregnant and one of the characters' names was Ashton. So
yeah, that's you don't hear a lot of Ashtons, but I mean, there is, you know, I mean, you hear them. I think the younger, well, I don't even know. I get my Gen Z and Gen Y and all that stuff mixed up, but a friend of mine's son, his name is Ashton, and I've seen him grow up, and he's in his 30s now. Of course, you've got Ashton Kutcher, but there's not a lot of you.
Yeah, there's a run of them. There was a run of girls for a while that was Ashton, but lately it's, you know, every once in a while I'll run into another Ashton guy. But anyway, things are good here. DFW has been a wild ride with the weather this week. It got up to 94 degrees a couple days ago. And I have been stubborn about my car situation. I drive my Ford F-150 when I want to, you know, on the weekends and at nights. But during the day when I'm driving and putting a lot of miles on my car, I drive my Hyundai Sonata. And it has had issues. And last year, the air conditioning went out. I spent money to fix it, and it didn't do much. And I'm like, I'm not spending any more money on this stupid car. Mm. So I went last summer with no air conditioning. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do this again. So I've been waiting. Like, okay, I thought I had a couple more months. But then this week gets up to 94 degrees. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Wow. But then this morning, it's 42. You know, it dropped back down. It's nice and chilly outside. So, you know, in general, the weather has been awesome in DFW. So I really, really love the spring, nice and crisp, no humidity. So got to get going on the yard. Definitely the weeds are coming up. I've got to figure that out because it will get away from you super fast. Well, why don't we do a little bit of a market update? Started searching the MLS slightly differently this time, and I started clicking on a few buttons, and I found the year-over-year statistics. So this January compared to last January, which I think is a lot more realistic as opposed to doing month-over-month, because right now it's seasonal. You know, we're in January. Seasonally, there's going to be less things available on the, you know, that just happens every year. So it's hard to, you can get some clickbait articles and saying, oh, housing's down. Well, it's down every December. It's down every January, you know. Yeah. But year over year, one of the statistics that popped out actually was the percent of original price that things are selling at. And that's something we look at. You know we're roughly 96%, 97%, depending on which county you're looking at, which means, you know, if you're offering a house for $400,000, you're eventually selling it for roughly 97% of your original asking. Well, a year ago, last January, we were at 100%. And I think the January before that was even a little bit higher. Those were the multiple offers and really, really hot market. But we've come down to reality. And that's one of the big numbers that has changed. Now, new listings is about flat year over year. You know, we have our sales price is slightly down from a year ago. It's, you know, almost flat, down 1.5% from last year. And the other thing that has gone up significantly is our month's supply. Last January, we've talked about how, you know, little supply is on the market, but last January, there's a 2.3 months of supply. And right now we're showing the entire MLS to be 3.1. Hmm. Of course, if Denton, Collin, Dallas County, where we deal with a lot of it, we're a little over 2. So still not a lot of supply. But when you look at it compared to a year ago, you know, it is creeping up. So overall, the market is, you know, it's picking up in volume. And I still feel like we're poised to have a really good spring, summer, because I think there is just pent up demand to move and kind of accomplish some things. And the longer the interest rates kind of stay about where they are, I think we have a chance to, you know, get a little bit more things going. I looked back historically, I think it was 93 to 2000. Those interest rates were exactly where we are now. We talked about that last week. So we're, you know, it's a similar environment then. A lot of stuff was happening. A lot of things were selling. So I was in a new build neighborhood last year or last week, and I did a little video about it. And they're still throwing up houses out there. I mean, those new builders they're trying hard, you know.
Well, so, I mean, you know, inventory again, if 3 months supply is still less than a balanced market, right? So yeah. We talked about this before, and, you know, we still have land to expand, and builders is where it's at. So, you know, as long as there's a need for housing and need for demand, and you know, you look at the statistics on how fast we're growing as an area. I think we went over that, you know, a couple episodes ago. You know, but as we continue to grow and job rates continue to grow and everything else, I mean, you know, where are you going to get the housing from if people are locked in these low interest rates? They're not wanting to move or sell their house. So the new builds is where it's at. Yeah. You know, we're going to continue to have that. I don't see that shifting or changing anytime soon.
No, the thing you got to be careful of, and this is what I did the video about, is I did an open house on Sunday. It was open house number 13. I did one Saturday and I didn't do a video. I need to go back and account for that one because there's going to be a gap. I didn't do a video for Saturday because Saturday's was different. It was a townhome behind a locked gate. I couldn't put signs out.
Did you have any activity on that? I know we talked about it.
Yeah. So I did this open house. I would not have chosen this one, you know, if it were me looking just objectively of, hey, where do I want to do an open house? But I told an agent I could do one. The one I committed to, evidently someone else took it before I said yes. They said, okay, well, we have this other one. And I was like, okay, sure, I'll take it. Well, she sent me the info. Turns out, townhome, occupied by a family with kids and a dog. And it's in a gated neighborhood. And not only that, but the neighborhood's really specific. I couldn't even put an open house sign in the yard. I had to prop it up against the porch. And so I put some signs out, you know, on the big roads leading in. But it just pointed to the gate, and then people would just have to come in and wander around. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get anybody off the street. And so I did not have any traffic for a little while. And I finally had one couple, I think might have just been walking the neighborhood. They came in. Mm-hmm. And then I did get an actual person who seemed
like,
to see
it. Wow, open house in this neighborhood? That doesn't exist.
Yeah, I thought this was illegal. No, I did get one guy that I think that saw it online, came out. He was a warm lead, and then he's ghosted a little bit. But, you know, okay, it was sort of promising. You know, I've got kind of a lead from that. And I was shocked, you know, because it just was a different house. And, you know, if I were them, I'd be pretty aggressive about pricing because they got their hands full with the kids and the dog and all that. So anyway, Saturday I went out. I thought it was going to be a killer one. Great house, showed great in pictures. It was a 2020 house and in a nice neighborhood up in Little Elm. And not one person came through. Not one freaking person. Oh, I was there 3 hours. And, you know, you start getting creative with your videos and you're trying to do stuff. And about halfway through that, I think, I wonder if they have a video camera in here. They're like seeing me redo these videos 9 times. And so it's always interesting being in someone's house because that was occupied too. But they have a mastiff. They were rushing out of the house when I was getting there and you could smell the dog a little bit. Not bad, but they had done a decent job with that house. Well, no one came through. I'm like, this is so weird because the weather's great. So I drove the neighborhood and like we're talking about the new builds, there was a ton of new builds in the same neighborhood from the same builder. So I went by the office for David Weekly there. And sure enough, they're offering houses for less than this house was on the market for. Now, it wasn't the exact same size, but it was pretty close.
Mm, yeah.
And, you know, those are the spec homes, but you could probably go through the build process and get close. Yep. And this house had a huge power line in the backyard that you could see, huge power line. And so I was just reminded, I went through this a year or so ago with a client in the same situation. And we rode the market down. We just kept decreasing 10 grand, 10 grand. But these builders have so many levers they can pull. You can pull one lever on the retail side, price. They can pull design center, incentives with the financing, and then the price and all these things. So I don't know. I don't know if you've... Well, you don't flip anywhere close to new builds, but have you dealt with that situation where you've kind of competing against new builds in the vicinity? And to me, you have to price really aggressively.
Yeah, no, you have to know all those things. And in fact, I remember that Wiley one you had in Inspiration, you know, remember having those conversations, you know, you have to really kind of work backwards. I mean, and mind you, most of the time that, you know, the person selling received those incentives on the front end too. And maybe they did, maybe they didn't, maybe they bought during 22, you know, but as an agent, you've got to know those things and you got to know what your competition is. And so you've got to understand strategically how to price against that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just important to understand, and it's kind of like a new car, right? You drive it off the lot that's got miles on it, but it's literally brand new. You bought it a week ago, you know, compared to something else that's never been driven before. You know, there's going to be a difference in the buyer's perspective on what that value is going to be. So,
yeah,
it's important just to know those things and back into it and just know what you're competing against and what kind of incentives you're able to give the buyer to compete. Maybe that's you paying title policy, et cetera, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, unless you've come in and done all sorts of custom work after the fact to really make that house different, you're basically competing against something they could build tomorrow. And it's just really, really difficult. So, well, why don't we get into a little bit of news?
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
From Dallas, Texas, The Flash, apparently official.
There's good news and bad news.
This is a massive story. Who wouldn't publish it?
We landed on the moon!
Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
A few quick stories here, and we really want to spend some time on the back end of this show. Tavis has got a few pressing issues with a deal he's working, and then another current event topic with solar panels, so stick around for that. But in the news, there's actually a home builder that popped up down in Georgetown. I grew up in Round Rock, Georgetown, just north of there, and a home builder faces 99 years in prison for misappropriating clients' funds. I don't know how long this went on, and they really didn't get into a lot of details, but yeah, he's facing multiple felony counts. He was a custom home builder, evidently had taken in several million dollars worth of clients' deposits and payments towards things. And it sounds like of course he wasn't completing the projects or they would have been happy with it, but I guess he wasn't completing projects and they found out he was spending the money elsewhere. So Tavis's way of keeping track of projects looks more and more attractive all the time. So,
at the end of the day, a custom builder is just a glorified GC, right? They're a glorified general contractor. And most of the problem with general contractors is that they don't do a very good job of bookkeeping and managing their money. So, you move somebody up that's built a couple custom homes, they get momentum, they put out a good product, and people fall in love with them, and, you kind of grow that business, and then you start getting people attracted, and, you've got timelines and different things like that that get you backed up, multiple things, right? You have weather, you have, vendor supply, you have all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. And depending on how they're paying themselves, and how they're eating on the deal, it's possible that they're front loading it and going, oh, I should be making 30-40% profit on this thing, and I'm going to go ahead and take that salary now, and then I'll repay it, right? I'll rob Peter to pay Paul. And, that it doesn't take much, for that to all of a sudden be completely upside down in your business model and be stuck, especially if you're doing it based off of draws and you're not stacking it properly and you're not getting things done on timeline. That's when these things get out of control. And you see it on the GC side all the time.
Yeah, it's dangerous. Just anytime you start dealing with other people's money, I've used a few investors, and it definitely puts this level of pressure on you, where you have this responsibility, and I know I could do better with it, but I've had the agreements with them and I'm upfront, and I try to explain everything that's going on. But even then, it's like, I'm sure I could do better making sure everything's, all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed. And that's a super small level. And I think once you get a little bit of success and, now projects, instead of a $50,000 bridge loan, you're talking about a $250,000 bridge loan, or you're talking about $500,000 deposit on a house. It's like there's, it gets.
When it's possible that he couldn't pay his bank funding, and didn't pay that, and he lost his lines of credit, all those different things happen, and it's unfortunate, right? I mean, in situations like that, you hope somebody cuts the pleading out early. But I mean, I've witnessed it with, custom builders where, it wasn't completely clear, but just there were some things going on with the transaction that I was like, what's the real story here? Something doesn't add up, why they're not able to get this project done. Yeah. And, that's when things just don't add up. Right. I mean, if you have all your things lined up right, and you're running a business model that makes sense with it, you should be able to knock this stuff out quick. Right. So and I don't think it's necessarily malicious. We hear these things, and immediately our brain goes to a malicious act, and somebody's taking advantage of somebody. And I don't know if that's truly what their intent is. Obviously, there's people out there that are crooks, and that's what they do. But on the other hand, there's people that just get in over their head, and before they know it, they're just in way too deep, and they don't know how to get out of it.
Yep. One day you're a builder, next day you're in prison for 99 years. Golly. So let's try to avoid that. Another story that popped up is a favorite shopping center of mine. Growing up, it has a lot of comfort feels for me. I grew up in Austin, and we would drive through Hillsboro a lot. And my family, my mom still lives down there. Megan and Dustin, who's been on the show, live down there. So I make the trip to Austin a lot still, and we go through Hillsboro. And since I've known that place, it's gone from a vibrant destination shopping town that was one of the first, you know, outside of San Marcos, it was one of the first outlet malls that I remember that was like, oh, this is really cool. And we would stop there and eat and get a snack and, you know, do a little, you know, school shopping before school started. And it has deteriorated into the saddest shopping center to where I think Bed Bath & Beyond is there and one other store. And so literally out of 100 storefronts, there's two operating stores. And it is so depressing. Gosh. And so you drive through there and you're like, how is this even sustainable? Well, it's changed hands, and evidently they do have some plans to revamp it. You know, I'm sure add some apartments or do something to kind of bring some density to that area and change up the look there. But I'm happy because, you know, that shopping center specifically holds kind of a fun place in my heart. And it's just been really sad to watch it go downhill all these years. And so next time I drive through Austin, maybe they'll have a few bulldozers out there trying to, you know, for a long time, their solution was they would put this kind of pastel, like this green and pink plastic on the front of these windows to try to make it sort of look attractive. And it even just, that's just creepy, you know? So good luck to them. I hope it goes well. And last thing, speaking of, we hope it goes well. I actually texted Tavis the other day. There is a really interesting neighborhood up in Frisco. It's called Tapestry Environment, maybe something like that. And I was coming from an open house, and I drove by this and I was like, man, that's a really interesting house. Pulled into this neighborhood. There's about four houses being built. I didn't know anything about it. But the thing you notice is these houses have plants on the roof, and they're sloped roofs. So I started looking into it. I texted Tavis. I thought maybe this was brand new, and he's like, oh yeah, that didn't go quite as planned. I'm like, oh man, he knows about this. So tell me, I know you don't know all the backstory, but tell us a little bit about what you thought that was supposed to be, and we can kind of talk about what it is now.
Well, originally and maybe, you know, now I'm looking at the brochure. But even if you look at the brochure, I mean, some of the stuff that they show on here of other things that were built, it's almost like a, you know, properties that they're building inside, outside of the ground, right? So like using the topography to build into the side of a hill, if you will, to where the home is kind of inside and outside, underground and above ground, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so it had it like it. I mean, some of the concepts and some of the conceptual drawings before the first place was built was like super cool and super intriguing, right? It definitely different for our area. It was something that we've never seen before around here, but you know, it was very intriguing. And now you kind of drive through the neighborhood and you're like, oh, this looks like kind of your typical boxy, you know, semi-track build home that's got grass on the roof. Yeah. So they're kind of goofy. And looking through, you know, the floor plans, I mean, we were doing a walkthrough here, virtual walkthrough, and, you know, it looked pretty cool. I was like, I can kind of get on board with this, you know, with what's here. And it's supposed to, you know, just basically connect, you know, the building itself into the natural environment around it. Yeah. If you look on the brochure, there's like a neighborhood that's been built out before. And I don't know if it's Texas. It looks like it's probably somewhere like, it almost looks like something up in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
But the whole tree is, I mean, the whole street is lined with trees, and like everything blends into its environment, you know, which I think is really cool. And maybe eventually that was kind of
maybe
what they're
in 50 years. I mean, if you go out there now, they started at like every other neighborhood where they take a bulldozer and they scrape the land.
Yeah.
And then they plat out, you know, you drive through it. It's all these plats of houses, just like a normal neighborhood. And the houses themselves do look cool. They've got this unique brick. It's just kind of this deep orange red, but they're all the same. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, it's like you've got four in a row and there's slight differences, but you know, you see the plants, but in the brochure, the plants are really lush and it's kind of, but when in reality, it seems a little anemic. And of course, it's winter, you know, so maybe that's part of it. So I don't know. It's, you know, I like the inside. One of the renderings that we saw, the thing I noticed that's different is they do all natural oak casing on all the doors and all the openings, which does kind of have a retro feel and sort of a, you know, what's his name? That real famous architect. oh gosh, the modern
Frank Lloyd Wright.
Frank Lloyd Wright. So I've been to one Frank Lloyd Wright house, and it's not made for people my size, that's for sure. I had to duck going through doorways, and I would not fit in one chair he built. He would build in a lot of little booths and chairs and stuff to his house.
Yeah.
That house, it was cool, but I was like, this is not for me. But this house has a little bit of that kind of 70s, I want to use more wood materials, a lot of glass type vibe. But the other thing we didn't mention is the starting price is $1.3 million.
Right.
So, you know, I'm sure they're having to develop some custom systems for the roof. Yeah, and
they can't
plants
be cheap to
that,
build. I mean, with the grass roofs, I mean, the amount of infrastructure you've got to do to protect that. I mean, it looks like instead of sheetrock inside, they're using plywood, you know, on the ceilings. They're doing, obviously, you know, a heavy waterproof membrane up there before they mm-hmm. can grow plants on top of it, you know, to keep it from leaking into your
home.
Can
you imagine having to call Pablo every spring and saying, hey, Pablo,
get up on the roof.
I need you to get on my roof. Pablo's Tavis's all around guy who is awesome. He does landscaping, and I need him to get over to my house and help me out because mine's kind of a disaster right now. But he's kind of a mastermind with all the landscaping. But I can't imagine calling him and his crew comes in and is like, well, I have to rope in to get up there because it's kind of sloped and they got these plants all over the place.
It's wild. Like I said, I think the original, I was really excited to see this thing come together. And now it just kind of looks like your traditional boxy home with a sloped, it basically not even a sloped ceiling. It's got a radius to it, right? So it's like it's a sloped radius roof with grass growing on the top. And
we'll put a link in the description so you can kind of get an idea about what
the
we're
other thing
about.
Is. We were walking through one virtually, and the master's upstairs. And I'm like, what?
Come
are you
on,
$1.3 million home, and you're putting the master upstairs in a unique design as it is. So not only does somebody have to get on board with it being completely different and being okay with that, then they also have to get on board with it being a non-attractive floor plan. Like, come on. I don't know who's behind this, but obviously they've had that development for the last 3 or 4 years. And I mean, there's only what, 4 or 5 homes built. So
yeah, I think
that tells you something, you know. Yeah. I mean, they're unfortunately, I think they missed the mark.
Might've missed the mark. So hopefully they don't sell the lots across the street. The 4 people who did buy there, hopefully they don't sell the lots across the street to David Weekly and they bring in their latest, you know, their latest 3-2.
Yeah, that'll be great, right? You have this. I mean, I think their big thing is the whole subdivision too. Like they have a lot of amenities and different things that they're trying to bring in from the environment and the feel of the neighborhood. So, I just don't think it met the mark for here, unfortunately. Yep.
Good maybe idea. Austin, I hope maybe, it works out for them. It would look cool in Austin. It would look awesome
in a hippie
Austin,
town like Austin. It probably would have done better, but this is like,
I think it would look cool there.
This is white collar Frisco, you know? I don't think.
Yeah. I think it was Frisco. Yeah. So anyway.
It is. It's up off of Independence.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into a little bit of Tavis's world. And Tavis, why don't you take us a little bit through the deal you're working right now and some of the issues that are going on there?
So, you know, one of the things, and this is real estate, but it's also just, you know, going through it before. In this particular property that I'm looking at right now, we've got a closing date set up here coming up. We're in contract. The seller had some things going on, so they, you know, asked for like 4 days to get me the seller's disclosure notice after we executed the contract. No big deal. Cool. I get the seller's disclosure and I look at it, and it's in a flood zone. And I was not aware of that before, even though technically I could find it on the tax rolls, but there was no indications to me based on where the property was located. I mean, there's a creek across the adjacent homes back behind them, right? But anyways, driving the property and driving around, I had no idea. Long story short, the previous owner had flood insurance on it, says, hey, it was in a partial flood zone, and carry flood insurance on it just to be safe. Okay, great. You know, and at the end of the day, it's in like a 100-year floodplain. You know, it's possible based on what FEMA map shows, but, you know, likelihood of it seems pretty rare. especially for the infrastructure of Plano and things like that. Okay. So nevertheless, you've got to just know that what you're seeing now on the acquisition side is going to affect me on the sell side. And so you have to go into it with the mindset of, what is this premium going to cost the end user buyer? And most likely, we talked about this before, you know, it's called a high threes, low four, you know, probably caps out at four, but nevertheless, somewhere between like the 375 and 400,000 ARV. And, you know, that fits in with the first time home buyer. So one of the things that comes into that is debt to income ratio. So a debt to income ratio is how a mortgage will be, or how a mortgage lender will qualify you based on how much money you can afford for a house. So the unfortunate part is when you have flood insurance that's mandatory by the lender, that's going to increase your premium, you know, call it even on the low side, let's say it's $100 a month, you know, that it's $1,200 more per year. If it's $2,000 per year, right, then you're probably looking at somewhere in the 140, 150 range. So the unfortunate part of that is you have to, I'm having to do the math today to figure out what the difference in value would be. So based on, you know, an average PITI, you know, on a $400,000 home with 3.5% down, what does that payment look like? Okay, with taxes and insurance. And then what would the difference be with that extra $150 a month on there? You know, and so what does that change the price point? You know, what does the price point need to reduce to make it competitive up against a home in the same neighborhood that doesn't have flood insurance and requirement, right? So that's the big thing you have to pay attention to in something like this. Again, it's not like the home is falling off a cliff or the creek's right in its backyard or something like that. But because it's the elevation cert came back and says, yes, for sure, it's in flood zone AE, we have to, you know, do our due diligence now to figure out the value and figure out how that's going to affect us. And I went through this years ago, about 5-6 years ago. We had a property. We didn't know it was in a flood zone. Again, kind of one of those things. There wasn't a lot of indications to show us that it was. And we get through the whole thing, renovate it and put it on the market, and all of a sudden it comes back, it's in a flood zone. We're like, what? Are you kidding me? So then the buyer, you know, is in contract with us for a certain price. We're excited. They want to keep the deal, but now there's floods, you know, flood insurance required. And so we have to renegotiate with them. And it ended up being like a price reduction to us of like, I don't know, $10,000-$15,000, which is a huge hit for a flipper, right? Yeah. Like right. That number hurts really bad. So going into this on the acquisition side this time, I just have to know, like, where am I at on this? And then I need to go back and renegotiate. Mind you, we're already pending, but this is an issue that, you know, you have to kind of hold your ground on and know that, you know, this is going to change things. This changes what the value is to the property. So,
yeah. And the flood maps are on the MLS. That's something when you're doing your comps, you can pull up that tab on the MLS and kind of see the different gradient maps and just kind of see.
They are. And they're pretty up to date. I mean, they go off of what FEMA shows. Mind you, you know, it's kind of a broad perspective, right? So, to identify it further is you order what's called a flood certificate. And that's done through a third party that's associated with FEMA. And I think it cost me like $600, but they go out there and it's basically a survey that they do on the actual property and take elevation readings and determine if it's truly inside of a flood zone. So it came back that yes, it is. Even though the elevations look very like on the border, but it was enough for them to indicate that yes, it's still in flood zone AE and X, which X is a 500-year flood zone and AE is 100-year.
Okay. So even if it cuts across the back corner of the plat, let's say, you know, the property dips down and the last 5 feet of the property line's in that 100-year or
if it's just plan. The yard, if it's the lot itself, that's okay. But it's where the elevation of the foundation of the property sits inside of that flood zone based on the elevation. That's a problem because, it's basically showing, hey, if this creek overflows, you know, it's going to go into your foundation, right? Mm-hmm. If it's just to the back of your lot and you have like a creek lot and your house sits at a high enough elevation and the creek won't go up to that point, then you're fine. You know,
okay.
You don't have to carry it. You could, I mean, you could add it if, you know, you just had a wild hare, but otherwise it's going to be required by the lender in this case, because it sits in flood zone AE.
Yeah.
So,
well, and this brings up just another thing that I've gone through recently with, you know, working with a lot of these investors that are reaching out and wanting to find properties, and some of them wanted to do off-market deals, which is fine. But so many of the off-market deals are managed by wholesalers that have relatively short option periods on them. And especially if it's an investment property that's occupied, you know, by a tenant that might be reluctant to be leaving. They don't even want to be selling this house. You're bothering them. And so then, and sometimes these houses, they give you minimal information. You can't really run by, and then the short time period, you've got a day, or, hey, deadline's today at 12, and you're having to do all this, all this research. You have to really learn how to dive into some of these numbers and facts that you would be deal breakers if you, mm-hmm. if you found out, you know, certain zoning or, like you're saying, flood, you know, flood stuff. So being able to get to that information quickly is super important. And this is also why doing those really quick wholesale, hey, rush type deals can be risky. And it's also why, on the other side, you know, homeowners selling, there's just stuff that can go wrong. And so as a flipper, you have to buffer in some stuff. And on the front end numbers, you might, well, look, you're making $100,000. Well, if everything goes really well, yeah. But there's a lot of things that can go wrong, and you have to be okay with putting that number in and missing out on some deals, because you're going to aggravate some people, because you know that it can go sideways. And if it does, this is a huge cost that you're going to have to factor in on the backside. So you just, mm-hmm. you know, be okay with walking away from deals if you don't feel comfortable with all the information you have. Don't rush into it just to get a deal done. I would, you know, definitely caution against that.
Yeah, I laugh because I had you and I looked at a deal in Garland a couple weeks ago, and, you know, we kind of held to our guns, and I think we were about $5,000 less than what they wanted to let the property go for. They were still going to make $10,000 on the deal. They wanted to make $15,000. Okay, I get it. You know, but their argument to me was, hey, you know, you have trades, and you have availability, and you might get $5,000 more for sales price, and you might be able to save $5,000 in some of your rehab, or you might mm-hmm. be able to do this and this and change your numbers and make it work for me. You know, if you just pay me the extra $5,000, you know, you can make it up in your deal. Yeah. I'm like, let's talk about risk, buddy. You know, you've got a couple $100 in a contract, you know, that you're wholesaling over here to make $10,000 to $15,000 in a couple of weeks. And you're trying to talk to me about trying to, you know, that I have more options to save $5,000 based on, mm-hmm. you know, my discovery of this property that, by the way, was boarded up, looked like it was raided, you know, you name it. I mean, this thing had so many, you know, wild cards on it, but we were able to do it, you know, and say, yeah, I could do it for this number. No option. Let's rock and roll. But here's my number. Make your $10,000 and go on. I think they ended up getting their number on it and selling to somebody else. But, you know, you just got to know what you're up against. I mean, you know, because you are the one stuck holding the bag, and it doesn't take much, you know, for that number, that $5,000 to turn into $10,000, to turn into $15,000, to turn into $20,000 on the backside. And then you're doing this thing for practice and breaking even, or, you know, worst case, going in the red, you know, and it happens. I mean,
then you're having to borrow money from another investor and you're going to go to jail. That's the moral of this story. Don't you know your numbers or you're going to prison. That's kind of what you need to know about all this. So let's get to the next topic here. So we'll spend a few minutes on this. Tavis wanted to talk a little bit about solar panels. Solar panels are, you know, it's interesting. You see the ads everywhere. You have a lot of people, a lot of salespeople on the solar panels. And, you know, the last speech I remember hearing about solar panels, I think, might have even been at a Keller Williams meeting where they brought in some of their vendors, and, you know, the title person talks, and then the inspection person talks. Well, then they had someone there for the solar company, and how they started out their speech was basically, you know, I know you think everyone's a scam, but we're not, and here's why. And I just thought, you know, you're definitely swimming upstream if if you're having to convince people why solar is not just this complete scam. And I'm sure there are situations where it makes sense and people are happy and all that. But Tavis, why don't you talk a little bit about the things that can go wrong with solar, the things that maybe some people don't understand when they get into those contracts, and honestly, what it looks like on the backside if you decide to sell your house, which most people statistically sell their house, I think, every 7 years. So the idea that you're going to sit here and live the life of not paying electricity after you pay this equipment off in 15 years, and then you're going to get to enjoy energy free, lights and TV for, the next 15 years after that,
yeah,
is probably unrealistic. So talk a little bit about that.
I'm going to try to keep this short, because I think this topic is hot right now. I'm seeing it fly around from other people in our industry on social media, especially real estate agents, because I think more and more people are getting stuck in a bind, right, where they sell this property and basically gets held up, the closing gets held up because they're struggling with this lien that's known as a UCC lien, which a lot of times UCC relates to, I think it's universal commercial contract, maybe.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong on that. But nevertheless, a lot of times that has to do with like commercial property that has equipment that's part of, that it's been financed, right? So it could be kitchen equipment. It could be, air conditioners. It could be, lifts. It could be any kind of major manufacturing equipment that's part of a building that has basically turned into a lease and that has a lien on it against the property. And so the property cannot be sold without that lease being paid in full or that contractual agreement being paid off, right? Basically, it's like a mechanics lien kind of thing in a way, but it has to do with the equipment. So that's how solar panels are related. And I bring this up today because I'm looking at another property. I have an appointment tomorrow to go look at a property, and I happened to catch it just by Google Earth. And actually, it might have just been regular Google, but nevertheless, I zoomed in. I wanted to check this property out. I go up to a bird's eye view, and I'm like, oh no, it's got solar panels. And so I hit the agent up. I'm like, hey, what's the deal on the solar panels? Are they paid for or are they under lease? She's like, oh, I don't know. I'll find out. So, I wouldn't have ever known that until I walked the property, but I happened to catch it early now. So I kind of know going into this. And the reason I'm concerned is because if there is an active lease on there, first off, there's like 20 different ways that these companies do these solar panel leases. Some are literally just a lease with like a service agreement. I think that Nick Good actually posted, or somebody just recently posted, a solar panel lease was sold to a guy that's dying, it was 90 years old, and it's a 25-year commitment, and this guy's on his deathbed, and it this kind of stuff is happening. I was in a transaction like 2 or 3 years ago in the colony, similar thing. It was a 90-year-old lady that was sold a 25-year lease contract. And I kind of looked at it, and she had enough equity in the house. And basically we were like, hey, cool, pay it off at closing, no big deal. Keep the solar panels, pay the lease off. It sucks. She got taken advantage of because I think she was sold it during like COVID, right? During 2020. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, I was like, whatever, just pay it off. We'll move on down the road. Well, there was a 5-year prepayment penalty. First off, couldn't sell the property within 5 years, or she couldn't cancel the contract. And then come further, it wasn't even an agreement to buy the panels. It was a lease for the service that the panels provided. And so we went up the chain. It was a mess. And Basically we were like, just come remove your panels. We don't give a crap. And then we even talked about paying off the lease, which was like $27,000, paying off the lease and come get your panels. And they wouldn't do it because they had a contract with Encore and they got a tax incentive when they installed it, they installed solar, so therefore they got tax incentives and they didn't want to pay that penalty. So therefore they wouldn't agree. The only way they would agree is if myself as the borrower or the purchaser would agree to a service contract to put it in my name for the remainder of the 27 years or whatever, or I could pay the 20 something years lease, and it still had the 5-year penalty. It was a mess. And I had attorneys look at it, and I mean, they're like, I've never seen one this bad. So they're not all that way, but I mean, they're just a mess. I mean, at the end of the day, the true understanding that I have for solar is that even if your house shuts down, let's say that you lose power on your block, and let's say it's sunny outside, it's 100 degrees, your solar panels should be kicking out enough, you know, energy to support running your house, right? But that solar panel energy doesn't go directly to your house. If the grid goes down, you lose power to your home. Mm-hmm. So the only way that works
is to the grid.
Yeah, it goes back to the grid first before it comes back to you. So if Encore loses signal or they lose power, you don't have power. The only way you're going to have power is if you have the battery backup or you have a generator, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of my biggest issues with it right off the bat is like, hey, you know, is it truly saving you money? Is it truly, you know, benefiting you as a homeowner, or is it benefiting the grid? More so, it looks like it's benefiting the grid because the grid pulls your power that's unused off of the solar panels that goes back to their grid, and they're able to sell energy at a cheaper rate because they make more money on your rate because it's being produced by the sun.
Well, plus the big problem too is like we've talked about a little bit, and maybe, you know, we might need to just find someone who's either gone through some of this and really dive deep into some of the, I'm sure the contracts they sign, you could like say, this is what you need to look for. Cause this is, I think, something that a lot of people should pay attention to. But from an actual roof standpoint, we have a lot of hail, you know, problems. You have roof damage. Like these are actually being installed into, you know, structure of the roof. And so that, to me, that would be a huge issue. What happens if there's a roof leak and, you know, who's responsible for that? What happens if there's a hailstorm and, you know, if you need to get shingles replaced and there's already these things up there? To me, that also is like, I'm sure there's some writing somewhere, but what happens if your roofer gets up there and damages a solar panel or something like that? I don't know. I've just always kind of stayed away from them because they seem like they're just a lot of, it's just a lot of extra, you know?
I had somebody not too long ago was asking for a roof replacement, but they had solar panels. And my roofer's like, I can't touch it. They're like, I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to mess with the panels. You need to get a solar company back out there with their labor crew to remove the panels so that I can replace the roof and then put the panels back. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't think it's worth it. I mean, I think that every Paul, Dick, and Harry roofer out there, again, you know, you don't have to be licensed to be a roofer. You can be a GC that turns into a roofer and chases, you know, chases hailstorms and chases, you know, the weather station around Texas and other states. And basically they got on board with, oh, hey, let's tag team. Let's do solar. We can sell solar. We're going to sell a roof and we're going to sell solar panels. And it's turned into this fad. And then they get these tax incentives. And, you know, they get paid up front and they don't care. I mean, once they get that contract signed, they're done with it. And it moves on to the service company that's servicing the lease and collecting rent. And that original guy that sold is long gone. So,
yeah, he gets paid. He's out.
It's a mess. It's a nightmare. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more lawsuits and things come up on this topic. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of this becoming an issue. You know, over the last couple of years, it's been more of the reverse of that, is like selling it and talking about how good it is. And you're seeing solar panels pop up everywhere, especially in like brand new subdivisions. And you're like, what in the world is going on?
Yeah, it sounds cool with a salesperson, and I'm sure they have a lot of graphs and what you're going to save. But yeah, more people who cycle through it and try to sell it on the backside, and it becomes an issue. You know, the realtors are realtors, and the National Association of Realtors is getting called to task for some of their practices. And you would imagine, you know, and a lot of it is based on consumer protection, and we're doing what's best for, you know, the actual bottom line for the consumer. Well, to me, this seems like one of the huge, huge issues out there. And at some point we'll talk about this. Don't get me started on taking advantage of seniors. I had a patient in home health. I sent this to you.
Yeah.
I was at this patient's house, 90-year-old patient, super guy from Grenada. We would walk outside. He has cool stories. He was telling me he was getting a front door, and two salesmen showed up in a Tesla, And I heard him talking in the kitchen. It was just kind of a really long conversation about a front door. And so the next time I was there, I just asked him, hey, where's your door? Oh, we're thinking about it. You know, it's a little bit much. I'm like, well, what are they going to charge you for the front door? He showed me the quote. He said it was $22,000. I'm like, this is a typo. This was a legit quote. And I texted it. I sent it to Tavis. I'm like, can you believe this? They had quoted a fiberglass door with a window and new frame. And they phrased it like it was sort of the guys that worked on the space rocket last week over there. Those guys were going to come over and do a little bit of tinkering on your front door. It was that complicated.
Yeah. Yeah,
and all these phrases rated. And leveling and, you know, blah, blah, blah. $22,000. I was like, please do not pay this. I have people that could send you. Please don't. Well, he actually went off my caseload. A couple months later, I go back. What do I find? A brand new all steel vault door. I was like, I didn't even ask. I was like, please don't, you know. But I'm sure they ended up, you know, I bet that same company said, look, what if we just upgraded the door from fiberglass to all steel? It's our best door. You know, we could go ahead and do that for you. I guarantee that's what happened. They still paid a ton of money. So. Anyway, yeah, don't get me started on that. That is there is a special place in Hades for those people. So that is today's episode. We hope you have enjoyed it. We have an interview set up for next Tuesday that we're going to bring to you. We're going to record next Tuesday, and then I've got another one lined up with a few people. So we do have those scheduled coming to you in the next few weeks. So please stay tuned to that. If you want to find me, I'm the Dallas Real Estate Guy on Instagram, Ashton Hines. If you want to find Tavis, it's Travis without the R, as he said earlier, on Instagram and on Facebook. We do have a YouTube channel, the Real Estate Heavyweights, and we got a few videos up, and we're going to keep working on that. And I will make an announcement. The next 3 weeks, I will be taking off from home health to sort of try my hand at full-time real estate. I have a ton of time built up, and so I'm taking those 3 weeks off, and I'm just going all in with just trying to block time, call people, do what I can to get into the real estate game. I've got a lot of investors I need to be helping out and driving, and I've just got a lot going on. So I'm really hopeful that that's going to take place. So stay tuned on Instagram and all the socials to try to keep track of that story. I would love to be able to come to you in a few weeks and say, it's official. So I'm definitely working towards that. But we really appreciate you listening. If you've enjoyed it, send it to a friend. Like it and subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. We've actually had a really good response with that. So just keep that up. It really does a lot for us and makes me feel good. And until then, I hope you have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.